from KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Hello, Houston, and welcome back to Guns Over Texas, brought to you by the voice of Texas, AM 700 KSEV, and Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, Houston's 2012 Concealed Handgun License Headquarters. Jeff, Jason, and Gary in studio today, and we're joined by Houston's number one ladies-only female instructor, Tracy Sanford. So holster your guns and pick up your phones. Call in now at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. And you can get us on GunsOverTexasRadio.com, Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook, and any other social media that Gary has made us a part of now.
You know, I just love that look of love that she gave you when you announced your wife over there.
We all know she's not a big fan of being on the air, but we do it for our listeners and for the ladies out there. If y'all have any questions about handguns, about shooting, learning how to shoot, concealed handgun license, anything like that, Tracy can definitely take care of you better than we can. So, Gary, anything new in your gun world this past week?
Not so much new in my gun world, although I am getting a lot of questions about the shooting that we had over at 1960 and Perry Road this week.
Yeah, it's been a big topic
of
conversation at Shiloh Shooting
Range. A lot of people
range.
Asking about, you know, the implications of Castle Doctrine, use of force, all that kind of stuff. So we'll be talking about that today. The only other new thing I have is not gun related. I spent all day yesterday driving race cars down in Hitchcock with the Racing Adventures folks.
You driving fast?
Oh, you
gotta be
dude.
Kidding me.
100 miles an hour all day long. It was fun.
What'd you get to drive?
I drove a Corvette, not a C5R, but a definitely a C5 Corvette. Race spec, had the roll cage and Simpson racing harness and an honest-to-goodness racing seat in it.
Well, I would bet that most gun folks would probably appreciate getting to do something like that as well.
Dude, the thing is that I came out of it knowing why race car drivers do what they do because, I mean, despite the noise and the smell of gasoline and burnt clutches and everything else, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's so surprising, Gary. I'd take you for more of a Prius kind of guy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Butter in a shoehorn to put him in a Prius.
No, I'd need two of them, one for each foot.
So, Jason, what's new with you?
Not a whole heck of a lot. I wish I had a shield that I could go out and try out, but apparently we're going to beat that into the ground for the next several months till I end up with one.
I hear there's a new facility that may have one in stock. Somewhere near the I-10 and Beltway 8 area.
Is it the Athena Gun Club?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Have you been by there yet?
I have passed by, but I've not been in yet.
I've seen some photos of it, and it looks like it's really
the
nice.
The showroom, all the photos I've seen of the showroom, it is a very nice showroom.
All right. If anybody has stopped by there, give us a call at 281-558-5738 and give us a report on the new Athena Gun Range.
I did get in my new PSA mid-length upper that I've been waiting for a few weeks. And overall, I'm quite happy with it. I've never had a mid-length before. For those out there that don't know, normally when you buy an upper receiver for an M4 style gun, you get carbine length or rifle length gas systems. Mm-hmm. The carbine length being 7 inches, the rifle length being 16 inches?
Something like that.
Yeah. It's much longer. And then there's the 9-inch mid-length system, which just gives you a little bit longer sight radius and a little bit more handguard area to work with, a little bit easier to get your hand out there on the four. It
makes
the
bayonet the actually work on the short gun, too.
For all the bayonet charging I'm planning on doing. it's one of those things
not
that always bothered
me.
It,
but,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have a bayonet. Don't ask me why I have a bayonet, but I do own a bayonet just for the principle of it. But what practical purpose I could ever have for having a bayonet lug on a gun except, damn it, the government shouldn't tell me I can't put a bayonet on that.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, it's kind of like the discussion we've had about, you know, there's a number of instructors, and one of them is John, where we talk about using guns and knives at the same time. And we don't all follow that philosophy because I am utterly convinced that if I have the opportunity to shoot you off the end of my gun, that's what I'll do. I don't really see a need to go into guns and knives at the same time.
I agree.
Well, your hand should be doing one thing at a time.
Yes.
We get into driving and shooting, especially. It's like you either drive or you shoot. You can't do both.
Well, yeah. I agree because I shouldn't handle knives anyway.
As his wife shakes
constantly.
Her head.
We have the first
while shaving
kit,
your legs.
The first aid kit at the range is it's always out of Band-Aids.
Because you're
of
always
me.
Cutting yourself?
Yeah, we get new knives in, and I got to play with
and
them
you
and
go
flick
play
them
with...
open and stuff, and it usually doesn't end well.
It doesn't shock me because I've seen the photos online, and Madi tells me repeatedly that when you try to get your fingers in the little baby wipes container that you manage to stick your finger in there and not be able to get it out.
So, that was pretty painful.
If you can't operate a baby wipe container, I'm assuming that knives gives you fits.
Well, okay. When you have a lot of new knives come in,
yeah,
you
defend
play,
it,
I understand.
Let's hear you defend
you've
this,
You've got to play with them.
I do not fault you in the least for playing with
test.
New products.
You've got to put them to the test. Now, let me say that every knife that I've cut myself with, I've ended up buying.
I would hope so, because I'm pretty sure your customers are going to go, wait, I bought a knife with blood on it?
No, this actually happened. I had a customer come in last week and said, sir, I bought this knife from you a couple days ago, and you can see where I've cut myself both here and here. And he had these big gaping wounds on his hands. And he said, I don't want this anymore. Can you take it back? I can't, sir. I'm
it's a
sorry.
Biohazard.
You've already bled on the blade. I can't resell that to somebody. And so I was the jerk because I wouldn't take the knife back. So
the knife that he cut himself with.
Yes, twice.
And so you bought it?
No.
Oh, okay.
I didn't want it back. I mean, if he cut himself twice with it, I can only imagine what I'd do to myself.
And I'm sure your blood is about as sterile as a lab monkey's. So.
It's probably better
they
than
call
Max.
Me the host. So you were talking about your upper. You said
yes.
An upper or lower?
Upper receiver. Okay, I've got lowers
PSA.
Coming in, but they're not in yet. Yeah.
Okay. Who are your lowers coming in from?
PSA also.
Palmetto State Armory?
Yes, sir.
They usually have some pretty, really good deals on
you got to wait, but like three or four times a year, there'll be a Labor Day sale, or there'll be a pre-Christmas sale, or the 4th of July sale, or maybe it's Veterans Day. There's two or three times a year when they really blow some prices out. And would it be my first choice as a fighting carbine? No, I'm still going to be all about Colt.
I was just about to ask you that.
Yeah, I'm still all about Colt, Daniel Defense, Noveske, BCM as fighting guns. But if you're going to buy a plinker gun, I would still say, from what I've seen, Palmetto is one of the – it beats the heck out of DPMS and Bushmaster and some of those other ones. So if I had to get a – I won't say it a lower-end gun, but a not a Tier 1 gun, for a bargain plinker, I've been pretty happy with the Palmetto. That being said, I've got two Colts for fighting, and for fun, I've got some other guns.
Now, Tracy, anything new in your gun world this past week?
Not particularly. Just doing
CHL
classes.
Uh-oh. It's the on button.
There
you
go. Yeah. All right. Not particularly, just doing CHL classes, yeah.
And how has the ladies-only group lesson on Wednesday nights been going?
It's been crazy big, but great. Great response, a lot of turnout, so it's been a lot of fun.
Have you been surprised at how many women are signing up for that class and coming in and doing it?
Surprised, not particularly. I knew that there was going to be a need.
What are a lot of the reasons that you're hearing from people about why they're coming in to do that?
Basically, the same old, just terrified of picking up a gun without knowing what they're doing. You don't know what you don't know. And wanting to have someone that's patient sit down and explain in detail exactly what it is that they're fixing to do, what's required of them, and, with patience.
I don't like the term terrified of the gun, but it's nice for people to have a healthy respect, especially if you don't know
what
you're doing.
They come in terrified.
You need the healthy
terrified.
Respect of... like picking up a snake. Mm-hmm. If you grab the wrong end, bad things can happen.
Yeah. Well, no, they come in. I get a wide range of ladies that come in, from crying and needing a hug to to
much like Jeff,
someone that just wants to know a little bit about it, and is it terrified? They just don't know exactly what's going on, and they need a little help.
And you're seeing women all age ranges.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember we had a 15-year-old recently, and you've had ladies that, upwards of
you had the 94-year-old.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we had a 74-year-old lady who bought an AK-47, and I hope she's out there listening right now. So give a shout-out to our friend Randy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, I tell you what, let's go ahead and head out to the phone lines. We got Rob in Cyprus. Rob, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Rob?
Hey, guys. Two quick questions. One is, I don't know too much about Glocks, but I was offered a Glock 17 this weekend.
Buy it.
9mm.
How much?
She, didn't say. I think it's like $600-$700.
That's a little bit high.
That's a little high,
Glock 17.
Yeah. Especially if it's a used one.
That's a used 17.
That's
more like a $400.
You could buy two used 17s for $700.
Yeah.
It's a good weapon.
It's a very
it's a good
weapon.
Gun. It's just that's a little high for the price. Mm-hmm. If it's just a Glock 17 and there's nothing special about it, then yeah, that's a bit high.
A fair price for a used 17 without night sights would be in the $375 to $400 range.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay, and the other question is, can you tell me about Freedom Munitions? Their product, are they made here in Houston?
They are actually made in Idaho.
Idaho.
The guys I know the guys who make the ammo, and they're actual shooters. You know, these are guys that run hundreds, if not thousands, of rounds a week through their own guns, and they make really, really nice ammo
and great prices.
Yeah, yeah.
They will ship to your door. I don't know about shipping costs, but a box of 50 for 9mm is like $11.50 a box.
Yeah,
which beats Academy all day long.
It does, and you know, most of it is reloads, but they look really, really nice. I'd rather have a box of Freedom Munitions than I would a box of Winchester any day of the week.
Well, I've been told they're opening up a storefront on 290, so that's why I assumed they were here in Texas.
Yeah, right around Jones and 290, if I'm not mistaken. And they should be opened up in the next few weeks from what I've heard.
Okay, are there any local Texas manufacturers of reloads?
Reloads, there's T's down in the Webster area. And I don't know I think that they've changed ownership.
Yeah, they have. It's not the old man anymore.
Yeah. So I haven't shot their stuff recently.
What was the name of it?
T's, just the letter T. T's Ammunition.
T's Ammunition.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
You're welcome, Rob. We appreciate it. And yeah.
I was going to say he could sweeten the pot as far as if the guy's offering $600 for the used Glock, it's possible maybe it's coming with holsters or a ton of magazines.
Or a ton of ammo.
Or a ton of ammo or something, but just a straight-up gun with one mag and nothing else?
Yeah.
$600?
Well, for $600, I'd take a Glock and 1,000 rounds of ammo.
Yeah, a Glock and 1,000 rounds of Freedom Munitions, that'd be a decent deal.
Yeah.
But if it's just the plain old gun, yeah, I wouldn't go over four for a used one.
If it's just the plain old gun, then that's not a real good friend.
But in all fairness, you don't know where he bought it from. And if he thinks I went and bought it from whatever, you know, Oshman's is out of business, so I can rag on them. But back in the day, Oshman's would have sold something like that for $650, $700 and told you were getting a heck of a deal. Hell of a deal.
You know, we don't know. This gun could have been at Dale Honeycutt's place. He could have had
grip reductions, Magwells, refinished. Why anybody would refinish a Glock is beyond me. But, you know.
But I've seen it done.
I know. Well, there's some guns that need refinishing because some guns, it's just not going to get that much better than refinishing it.
Right.
Are we going to delve into the turtle wax question?
Yes.
Well, let's give a shout-out to our friends at the Polanski Unit. We thank you for listening, and we hope Chow is good to you. So we've got a question regarding stainless steel gun protection. Would you use turtle wax on a slide?
No, and I would not.
Why not?
I think that the gun tends to be slick enough as is, so I don't know that I want to
make it slicker.
I tell people this, and it may come off wrong, but at the end of the day, I personally am not a guy who buys guns for hunting. I buy guns to shoot people. Now, not just anybody, people who really need to be shot and are acting in a criminal manner and acting as if they benefit from being shot. Mm-hmm. But that said, when that needs to happen, I kind of need to happen in a hurry, and I really don't need anything in the world getting in the way of me poking a hole in this guy. Mm-hmm. A slick slide could be a problem, is just the way I look at it.
And if you're already sweaty or panicky or bloody or God knows what.
God help you if you're bloody, sweaty, and oily all at the same time, because then it's going to suck.
Now, the other thing is that car wax is formulated for painted car bodies.
Right.
Bare stainless steel,
it might actually
work. It might not. I couldn't say, but I know that there's not a great deal of people out there putting it on the gun as is.
Right.
I don't think that would be a wise.
Yeah, I mean, typically, if you're concerned about maintaining the finish of a gun, mm-hmm. you know, the tradition is a wet, oily rag. You know, something like CLP, Brake Free, does okay for that. You still have to wipe it down every so many days, and you may put a dehumidifier in the safe with it or some sort of dehumidifying sock, something to absorb moisture to keep that gun from rusting or being exposed to moisture.
Mm-hmm. Stainless steel is not the worst finish that a gun could have, but it's definitely not the best. Things have come a long way. Sure. Now, back in the 70s, if you only had blued and stainless to choose from,
then it would have been the
obviously
choice.
It was a better choice. But with Tenefer and Bertron and Nitride and, and about 50 other proprietary finishes out there.
Or even hard chrome or MP3 you know, any of those, the
Black
shake
tea.
And bake. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot better out there than just plain bare stainless.
Yeah.
And you'll see even Smith & Wesson on their M&Ps that we discussed last week. Mm-hmm. It's a black slide on the M&P, but it's stamped stainless on there. So they looked at it and said, stainless, it still might need a little help.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So to our man, Elvis, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you sending us the mail, and good luck to you.
Yep.
So back to let's talk about a little bit about idiots with guns. Okay.
Well, I would like – I don't remember if I ever brought this up on the show, but you kept saying you stabbed yourself not once but twice, and it brought me back to a story that I had heard in a big box store a few years back where there was a lady who wanted to buy a revolver because her automatic kept going off. So you walk through the store that rhymes with mad at me. And, you know, I'll shop. I'll look around while the kids are getting sneakers or something because they tend to sell all kinds of stuff at this big box store. That's all fine and dandy. But the lady is at the gun counter, and she's explaining to the guy while her six kids run wild that she needs a better gun because the one she has just went off by itself twice. And the guy is pointing her towards a revolver because the revolver won't go off.
You
got to
point a lady like that towards OC spray and a dog. That's what she needs.
The dog just went off by itself.
Or point her towards an instructor. You know, send her to Tracy, somebody.
This is before I don't even know if I was hanging out at Shiloh at the time. It was a few years back. But it just stuck in my head that she kept saying, well, the gun just went off. And, you know, I foolishly at one point went over and interjected about could there be something mechanically wrong with the gun, and I was told it was a, you know, she had just, you know, bought it from somebody, didn't know the brand, didn't know what kind, didn't know the caliber. She had bought it from somebody, and in the conversation, if you don't know the caliber, how did you load it? Well, no, it was already loaded when I got it. Okay, so we don't even know if it's loaded, hammer back. It's one of those things. Well, was the safety on? Well, I don't know. Okay, and then it just dawned on me that, well, the gun goes off because you probably touched that little thing called the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it went off again because you touched
the
little thing called the trigger again.
Contagious shooting.
And you don't know what the gun is, what the safety – I mean, all these things are like, is the hammer back on it now? I don't know. All right, this isn't a problem for me. This is a problem for the salesperson behind the counter. I'm just going to tap out now and leave before something just goes off out of your purse. You know,
in defense of civilians everywhere, I'm going to tell you of an incident when I was working at another gun range where I had a 25-year veteran of our Harris County Sheriff's Department come to me and tell me that some portion of their gun had gone downrange. And when I asked, well, was it the slide? Was it, you know, guide rod, what? And the response I got was, I don't know. I'm not a gun nut.
Wow.
And it kept going, kept getting worse because I walk out and it's a 1911.
Ooh.
And
not
and
necessarily a gun that a gun that a,
that
non-gun,
a non-gun
nut,
nut ought to be carrying.
What would fly off the end besides a bushing, maybe?
A two-piece guide rod that unscrewed, and the other half of it was downrange. And so I was like, well, you got a two-piece guide rod. You know, we'll retrieve that. So we shut down the range to go retrieve that part and bring it back to the area, make sure the gun is clear and all that kind of good stuff. And I said, you know, you probably don't need a two-piece guide rod on a duty gun. Is this your duty gun? Oh, yeah, this is my duty gun. Really? This is your duty weapon. Okay, well, what made you pick this out? Well, one of my friends on, you know, their special response team or whatever said that this is what I should get. And I'm going, really? And you are a 25-year veteran. And she's got credentials, and her friend is there with
her.
She? Well, yes, it's...
You threw that out there.
Yeah,
okay.
I wasn't going to get there.
You kept that part back.
I was holding that back because that's really not germane to the issue.
What do the damn Germans got to do? Sorry, Smokey and the Bandit sub reference from 77, guys. Move on.
But I was just, you know, I said, look, maybe we should put a standard guide rod in here. It's a duty gun, you know. And every other response was, I don't know, I'm not a gun nut. And I finally went, let me ask you this. Are you a car nut? Well, no. But you know that your patrol car needs gas, right? Well, yeah. I said, but you're not a car nut. You know that your car needs oil, right? Well, yeah. But you're not a car nut. At the end of the day, it's part of your equipment. Mm-hmm. You have to know that this kind of bullet goes in it, that one doesn't. You have to at least have an understanding that there's a hammer, a bang switch, and a, you know, a safety. You have to know these things. How can you walk around carrying a badge and not know this? How did you get out of the academy?
All you need to know is put the thing on the thing and press the thing.
Someone in my academy class who will remain nameless because I don't know if they're... Oh, we're going to commercial. He gets a reprieve for now.
Houston, we're going to hit this quick commercial break, but we'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. If you have any questions, comments, want to get involved in the show, if you have questions for Houston's number one ladies only concealed handgun instructor, give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738.
Well, the Texans are on. Nobody's going to call.
That's right. We'll have to wait for hour number two. We could probably not even talk guns and get away with it. Nobody would know. Our 11 listeners are watching the game right now. So.
There's literally tens of people out there hanging on my every word. But no, like going back to the academy back in the day, they actually grouped us. We had four squads in our platoon, our class, whatever, mm-hmm. and they actually grouped us around the guns we carried. So when they said squad one,
basically,
come up to the line,
system.
Your operating system. Yeah. Squad one was 1911. Squad two was Glocks and other safe action type pistols, XD type pistols. And then squads three and four were double singles, Berettas, SIGs, things of that nature. And it made sense for them to get us up on the line at different times and do that. Well, one of the guys in my group was having some issues, and I was told as the student squad leader type person at that time to take him down to the end of the line and see if I could unmess up whatever was messed up. So we go down there, and I'm going over with him about, okay, you're going to draw, your hands are going to come out here, going to meet in front, we're going to punch out to the front with both hands, you're going to take your safety off, and then we're going to squeeze the trigger. And then when we tuck back in, when we come back to the high ready, we're going to re-engage the safety. We're going to go back to the holster. We do this drill 5, maybe 10 times. And at one point, I comment that, you know, nobody's shooting anymore. And I don't hear a click, click where the safety is clicking off and on. And I'm like, is your safety that loose that I can't hear it? And the guy goes, what safety? I said, the safety on the side of the gun. What safety? I said, the safety on your 1911. And he looked at me and goes, what safety? And I said, this, and pointed at it. And he goes, oh, that's a safety? So apparently for 2 or 3 weeks of the academy, he'd been running around with a hammer back on a gun. Fortunately, there were no bullets at the time, but he had absolutely no clue that a 1911 had a safety on it, nor that it was supposed to be using it. And when queried about it, he said, well, before the academy started, they said we all had to have a gun. I didn't own one, so I just asked my uncle if I could borrow a gun. He gave this to me, and I'd never shot it before we got here. Hmm. Yeah.
But they're all highly trained. Well, they are after they get out of the academy.
They're all well, after 3,000 or 4,000 rounds through the gun. We had that part worked out. I can't vouch for other issues this individual might have had, but that issue was solved, and he didn't know what a safety was.
Well, hopefully he's advanced with his shooting skills by now and knowledge.
And
hopefully.
then what's scary is at other points you get into the car. As you mentioned earlier, high speed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
After we've dealt with the people who've. You know, don't know how to use the safety on their 1911, which is fine. If nobody's mm-hmm. ever taught you, you don't know. Mm-hmm. But most folks have driven a car before. But now we're going to put you on a track mm-hmm. with nothing else around and stick you in a Crown Vic. And
hopefully you don't run out of talent and pavement at the same time.
Wow. Wow. And after a few days of getting terrified to death in a Crown Vic, then we're going to stick you in an Impala or some other front-wheel drive Taurus or something. And then we get to do it all again in front-wheel drive. And wow. The fact there aren't more deaths caused in police cars is just beyond me.
Well, no, that is the leading cause.
Well, I've been getting real frustrated reading accounts of stupid people doing stupid things with guns. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the gun is an inanimate object. It only does what it's told.
This is true.
Yet when we read things in the media, you would think that the gun has a mind of its own.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like there was a former West Point football player who shot himself in the head recently. You see, he was with a group of friends, and he removed his Glock 21 mm-hmm. and took the magazine out And his friends, while they were begging him to put the gun away, he wanted to show them how safe the gun was with
no
magazine in it.
I already hear a problem with this process. This sounds like the DEA agent.
Well, naturally, if you want to prove that something is safe, you point it at your head, right? Well,
that shows his confidence. He was confident in what he had done, even though he was wrong.
He
was committed to the end, apparently.
He pressed the trigger,
and it worked as advertised.
The gun worked right as advertised. Okay. Now, when I read the story in the paper, mm-hmm. it was tragic accident that this happened.
No, not really an accident.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, it would be an accident if he wasn't pointing the gun at his head and if his finger wasn't on the trigger. But anyway, the media reported that he had a bullet hidden inside the chamber that he didn't know about.
No. Bullets do not play hide and seek.
They're sneaky. They are sneaky boogers.
Ninja bullets.
It just snuck right up in there and did its job like it was supposed to.
You know, this reminds me of, remember the report that we had coming from basically the Middle East of Muslim-seeking bullets? Okay, because they were made in Israel, they were Muslim-seeking bullets. Well, you know, I'm sorry, bullets don't hide in chambers, right? They get inserted when you insert a magazine, you rack slide, you condition the firearm appropriately. That bullet wasn't hiding at all.
That's right.
Was sitting right up there in the open.
That's right.
To anybody who actually knows what they're doing with a firearm.
I usually get my comments deleted from the websites that these stories are on and from the Facebook pages because it's just infuriating. And this morning I woke to another news story. It was one of the local news stations about two gentlemen who were at their workplace in Northwest Houston. And, they decided to play around. One had a knife. One had a loaded gun. And they were just playing. But the gun, predictably, went off. Okay,
I'm sure that
the gun
racked itself. It loaded itself. It depressed the trigger and disengaged all the safeties. It did this all on its own without any human intervention, mm-hmm. and it did it just when it happened to be pointing at another person.
That's right.
Those guns are sneaky. Absolutely.
You know, not quite as sneaky as the bullets that hide.
That
hide in places that you would never expect them to be.
And then the gun just went off. Which. Yeah. That's another one that just drives me nuts, and I tell this to all of my CHL students, but the deal is, here's my experience. I've now been shooting competitively in one form or another for 20 years, and thankfully most of this is on the taxpayer's dime. Thank you very much, Mr. Taxpayer. But I fired about 1.5 million rounds in that time period. I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen a gun go bang without somebody's booger hook being on the bang switch.
Yep.
You know? So when you tell me it just went off, I'm going to call you a liar pretty much every time.
But it's exactly. The culture of nobody wanted to have personal responsibility when, hey, there's a manufacturer with millions of dollars out there, and if I play my cards right, I'll make bank off me being a dummy. That's the lowdown on what it is.
I have to ask you. I got to tell, if you're a responsible gun owner and you see these stories and they drive you nuts, don't just click to the next one. Put something in the comments field. Say something.
If you go to the Chronicle comments field, though, I still say that's the most hilarious comedy writing in the world.
Oh, gosh. It's the biggest collection of communists in Houston.
Communists, but also, well, I can throw both sides under the bus on this, because no matter what it is, it's going to get turned into a political argument. Someone
right,
can say, Bob Smith had the world champion pumpkin this year at the pumpkin patch. Damn Obama. Well, damn the Tea Party. And it's like, well, it's a pumpkin story. What the? And it degrades into that within one or two comments every time.
Let's head out to Crosby and talk to Dwayne. Dwayne, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Dwayne?
Hey, this is Dwayne. I had experience. Unfortunately, I found that part of Liberty Road was missing a big chunk of it between 610 and Highway 90. If I had a accident where my truck had actually flipped over in the ditch.
Ooh,
yeah, this is about a month ago. I'm still recovering somewhat. But I had a Taurus 24/7 in my pocket, 45 cal. Never went off, even when the truck had flipped over 5 or 6 times.
Well, it's designed to be drop-proof, roll-proof, and slam-proof, so thank God Taurus worked for once.
Hey, imagine that, yeah.
Because after rolling my truck, the last thing I want to do is get shot on top of it.
Hey, yeah, and now at that point, it would have been almost a blessing, I would think, out of the pain I was in. But
sorry, man.
I tell you, I hear about all these accidental shootings. I'm going, I had this gun in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Around me, they pulled me out of the wreckage. They put the gun down my chest. The officer actually transferred a gun over to my relatives, and there at the hospital, HPD was great. But I'm thinking, after all this handling, after the wreck, after people around me, the gun never went off. And I shoot about once a week out here in Crosby, but, you know, that's, yeah, these afternoon shootings, there's got to be something else going on with that.
That's guaranteed, every single time. And that's the sad part of it is that no one in the media typically is interested in actually reporting the truth or the facts of the case. It fits their narrative to say that it just went off. But, you talk to that person and ask them, you know, 9 times out of 10, they'll actually say, oh, well, yeah, I did put my finger on the trigger. Well, what do you think's going to happen?
And even in that craziness, you know, I'm missing about 2 seconds when, you know, that back tire hit that big hole. But, you know, it still stayed in pocket. It did not go off. And I'm thinking, well, there you go.
How fast were you going, Dwayne?
Probably between 40 and 50, but this this chunk is about a foot deep right there on the real sharp corner of the road. It's an old road, probably a good 80 years old before Highway 90, our new Highway 90 existed.
Can we assume the County of Harris is going to be buying you a new vehicle?
I don't know yet. I'm still looking at that and seeing what
I'm sure if you call the Texas Ham or something, you'll get worked out pretty quick.
Jim Adler.
Yeah. There you go.
Now, Dwayne, you said you had your 24/7 in your pocket. Did you have it in a pocket holster, or did you just throw it in there?
I actually had it in the pocket. It's in, I guess, these shorts that are kind of got the cargo pockets where they snap shut and all that. It was tight. Yeah, you know, I don't carry it in my waist. I just, I've always carried it in my pocket. Of course, these shorts have large pockets in it, so it's, I never imprint or anything like that, but,
And what's the name of that range out in Crosby?
It's High Noon.
High Noon, all right. Give us a review of that place. What do you think of it?
I really enjoy it. I mean, you know, I've known the people personally for years, and they finally got their ventilation worked out. Actually, I'm an AC man, and I went in there and I kind of strained out a few things, and that got it to where it was nice and cool once you were shooting in there and all that, but... Or it did get kind of hot, and the AC wasn't set up right. It was a little bit leaky.
But. Well, we're glad they got that taken care of. The AC and ventilation is the biggest nightmare for an indoor range that can possibly be. And those are really, really nice folks who run that place out there. So
They are fantastic. I mean, matter of fact, they left me a message wondering where I've been at, you know, and I haven't gotten back with them. Until,
well, next time you stop in there, tell them we said hi. Tell them the guys from Shiloh said hi.
Okay, I sure will. Sure will.
All right. We appreciate you, Dwayne. Glad to know you're doing all right.
All righty, man. We'll see you.
Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. If you're on hold, hold on for just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back and getting right to the phone lines with more Guns Over Texas. Guns Over Texas, Houston. If you don't have your concealed handgun license yet, you need to get it now. There's a special going on at Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range. 2 concealed handgun licenses for $150. That's right, $150. So get your wife, get your husband, get your daughter, get your son, get your family out, and take your concealed handgun license class together. All right, back out to the phone lines. We're going to head out to Magnolia and talk to Chris. Chris, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Chris?
Hey, how y'all doing tonight? Good listening to you. Hey, what I'm hoping is you can give me some gun selection guidance and maybe some things I might consider. The ultimate goal here is for my wife and I both to get our CHLs, and I've been shooting, you know, revolver for a number of years, and clearly I don't want to qualify with that. So I've kind of been looking for a semi-automatic and attended some... you know, some gun shows, and that's kind of overwhelming. I mean, there's thousands of guns, and there's a good place to go and pick them up and feel them and see how they are in your hand. But in terms of selections for, you know, personal, well, just for shooting, but also for personal protection, you know, 9mm versus 40, I'd like to get something that's American built. You know, what about safeties, trigger safeties, grip safeties? I mean, what guidance would you give someone like myself that's clearly not real knowledgeable on these, but I want to make, you know, a good selection. And what would you, how would you suggest I proceed?
Chris, this is Gary. I'll tell you that at the end of the day, I prefer simpler choices. So I will tend to aim you towards the simpler guns. Yes, there's 1911s and, you know, HKs and SIGs and all these sorts of choices out there. Among American manufacturers, I would say Smith & Wesson and or Colt. But I would say Smith & Wesson's got the lead right now with the M&P.
But since your Glock comes out of a factory in Smyrna, Georgia, it's still getting injection molded here in the U.S.
You know? Yeah, so
it might be
so
a Glock design, but it's made here.
Yeah, it's an Austrian design, but it is now American made.
Yep. Oh, really?
Yeah, so that is an option. Both of those are good choices. I lean towards the Glock mainly as an issue of simplicity, because I can work on that with very little tooling.
And magazines and holster magazines choices.
And that's the thing, is that if we...
End-user support.
Yeah, if you look at the end of the day... you have to think about if you're going to carry the gun, you use it for self-defense or competition, and I recommend doing that because it's a place to continually use your core skills of operating the gun. Then you need a holster. You need to buy magazines. You need a readily available spare parts. And that's what brings us to those guns that we always recommend. Part of the reason we don't talk about Taurus and, you know, some of the weird brands that are out there is because they don't have quite as much aftermarket support or market support in general. If it comes down to the Glock or the Smith & Wesson M&P, I can find parts for those all day long. If it comes down to holsters, if a holster company only makes two holsters for two guns in the world, the two they're going to make it for are going to be a 1911 and a Glock. And okay. Right behind that will be the Smith & Wesson M&P.
So clearly, with respect to concealed carry, mm-hmm. I mean, size is an issue, and that's something
right.
I just have to make a selection on. But what I find, unfortunately, are the ones that are most comfortable in my hand mm-hmm. are a little larger than I probably want to try and put in my pocket.
If you're looking for a pocket gun, the one that we keep recommending right now is the Smith & Wesson Shield, M&P Shield. That's the one that you know, all three of us have at least shot.
You just can't get a hold of it, though.
Yeah, you can't get a hold of it, but it's a nice gun.
It's a really nice gun.
And then right behind that, behind that would be Carr's, the CW9. The CW9 is small and is about the same size as a Shield. It's a relatively smooth trigger. It's a long trigger, but it's usable. The difference between a CW9 and, say, their P9 or even the K9 series is that the CWs aren't quite as well finished. They
cosmetic
have
only.
Cosmetic finish yeah. only. Mechanically, they're the same.
Okay.
So I would.
What about all these Glocks? I mean, all the different numbers.
With the Glocks, you just look for a 9mm Glock. You don't need to. I'm a big proponent of 9 is fine. So I'm not going to tell you to get into the high pressure rounds unless you just want to shoot a more expensive round. 9mm is just fine. So with Glock, that's the 20. That starts with the 17, mm-hmm. the original Glock that came to the U.S. Next up would be the Glock 19, which is a smaller version of that gun. It's kind of mid-range. It's not small enough to be in a pocket, but it's big enough to shoot and small enough to conceal carry.
Probably best all around.
Yeah,
it's probably the most popular handgun in the world, I would venture to say.
If I could have only one Glock, that's the one that I would have. Because I can carry concealed. You do have to dress around it. You'd have to get a decent holster and a decent belt, but you can dress around it.
Okay.
And then next after that would be the Glock 26, which is their small compact gun. And actually, Jason here carries a small version of that gun. In
wearing
his pocket.
It right now.
Yeah.
It's not in my pocket. It's actually on the hip for once.
Oh, yay. So it's not in the tactical sock holster.
Yeah, it just depends on what I'm wearing that day, you know?
So yeah. what kind of safeties do these have? Do you recommend one versus another?
The Glock and the M&P and the guns that we tend to steer toward these days have passive internal safeties, much like your revolvers did back in the day. So if you, what's your basic rule to keep them being safe with the revolver? You keep your finger off the bang switch, correct?
Right.
So the same thing applies with the autoloaders. You simply keep your finger off the trigger, but otherwise these guns have been tested. There's no gun manufactured in this country today since 1980 that doesn't have to pass a drop test. So, you know, whether it's a Glock or an M&P or even a Ruger, as much as we rag on Ruger, Ruger does build a decent gun.
Mm-hmm.
Those guns will not just go off because they hit the floor unless somebody has done something to them.
or if they're not carried in a quality holster. Right. When you hear people who shoot themselves with Glocks, 99% of the time, they put their finger on the trigger and pulled the trigger. Actually, 100% of the time. That's the
only
way. Every
single time. I've sat there. I've actually watched a student do that. He had no idea that he wrapped his finger around the trigger. I literally watched him put his finger on the trigger and press the button, and he was utterly shocked when it went bang.
Mm-hmm. About the only true, what I would call a true accidental discharge out of a Glock would be if you bought a cheap holster, and when you're trying to put the gun back in the holster, some part of that holster
gets into
the trigger guard. Like if a part of the thumb snap or something gets in there, and you're shoving down on the gun, and there's something wedged in the trigger guard while you're holstering it, well, then it went off without you putting your finger on the trigger, but you weren't paying attention to the holster. If you buy a quality holster, that's never going to happen. Yeah.
And how do you make that determination? I mean, is it actually, when you say a quality, that's more dollars?
A $10 Uncle Mike's nylon holster is not going to be a quality holster.
Yeah,
if you buy a one-size-fits-nothing holster,
right?
It's what they call them, bucket holsters. A one-size-fits-nothing holster is never going to be good for anything. Buy something that's got a stiff amount of leather on it. It's a quality holster. You can feel, if you feel a suede holster, it's a flimsy, collapsible, yuck holster. It's not going to work.
Yeah. Well, we can name names. We can go, we've got locally Comtac. You've got Crossbreed makes a wonderful holster. Mm-hmm.
Tucker Gun Leather
is another one. So you've got, in the Houston area, Tucker, Comtac, and Hoffner's.
And Safariland, I'm wearing a Bianchi right now.
And then you've got Bianchi and
DeSantis.
Yeah.
So, and Chris, it really, when you start carrying a gun, it's a lifestyle change. So, you're no longer just part of the crowd, and you need to dress accordingly. And in order to carry a gun, it starts with the belt in order to properly and comfortably carry a gun. And it doesn't really matter the size of the gun. You can I walk around with a full-size, Smith & Wesson M&P all day, and that's in an inside-the-waistband holster with a Comtac belt. And without the belt, I would probably be pretty uncomfortable in picking my pants up all day long. And with that belt, it's formed to my body. It's lined with Kydex on the inside, so I can comfortably walk around with that full-size gun. And if I choose to, I can put a backup on as well, and it sticks to my body. So when you're talking about carrying, you really need to invest in a good belt and in a good holster as well.
Yeah,
it's going to make life a whole lot easier.
Well, and at the end of the day, you may ultimately need to actually come and talk to Jeff or someone else at the shop and actually see examples of how we're carrying these guns, because it's hard for us to really describe this stuff on the radio. But that's actually a project that's coming up, is that we're actually going to start producing videos for the show that we'll have posted on our website.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff's got a bucket of holsters up there, different kinds, different makes, different models, and he's got guns that you can actually feel and mess with. I'm sure he has some rentals. And before you just go out and buy something because, I bought it at the counter, it felt good, go out, get with Jeff, get some instruction, rent a couple guns, see what you like, see what fits you, and see what you can actually conceal.
Okay. Good recommendation.
No problem. And as far as some of that other stuff, like you had mentioned grip safety and some of that other stuff, again, all of it's going to boil down to, if you don't put your finger on the trigger, the gun is not going to go off.
That's right.
And that's one of the big selling points I always hear when I'm in gun stores and people are trying to push an XD, is it's so much safer than the Glock because it has a grip safety. Well, if you keep your finger off the trigger, it's just as safe as every other gun ever manufactured. We rag on XD, but the gun works. I haven't got a problem with XDs in general. They're just not my favorite. But the grip safety is kind of an irrelevant feature.
It is. Well, a lot of people don't realize that it wasn't supposed to be on the 1911. That was something the Army required as a second thought. And
in
Browning,
case you dropped it off a horse. Since
right.
It was supposed
and
to be
and
a
Browning
gun.
begrudgingly put it on. But you talk to, if you look back into history at all the gunfighters that carried that gun, the serious operators, a lot of them actually pinned that safety. Now, I'm not recommending you do that on your gun, but, in all seriousness, it's an appendage that doesn't need to be there.
To me, the simpler, the better. The less, actual safeties and decockers and all these other things that you have to have fine motor skills in order to operate. I don't want any of that stuff on my gun. If I ever have to use my gun,
as long as the gun is set up where in the case of the Glock or the M&P or even the XD, they all have a firing pin block in them. So if they drop, they're not going to go bang unless you've done something to mess with that system.
Okay.
Yeah, the kitchen table gunsmith is the one that usually makes the gun go off accidentally.
Yeah.
Let me ask you one final question.
Yes, sir.
My wife's been looking a little bit at that Smith & Wesson 380, the bodyguard.
Uh-huh.
What are your thoughts on that?
It's a, you know, it runs.
If I had to have a 380, that would be one of the better ones.
Yeah, for not much larger in size, she can move up to a car PM9 or CM9.
Right.
And have a 9mm instead of a 380.
That's cheaper to feed. Yeah.
Just because the 380 is small doesn't mean it kicks less, because it's a blowback operated gun, and it's going to cost more to feed it ammo.
Smaller, it's going to be less comfortable to
shoot. Less comfortable to shoot. Smaller guns also typically have more issues with feeding and reliability. Smith & Wesson is probably one of the better 380s, but it's still going to have issues that your larger guns aren't going to have. Stepping up to a 9mm shield or to a car is probably going to make you happier in the long run. You'll be able to afford practice ammo, and you'll be able to afford to shoot it more. And as far as that little laser that's on that bodyguard, as soon as you get it, just take the little laser module out, smash it with a hammer, and forget it was ever there, and worry about using the bumpy things on top of the gun called sights, because laser things are simply crutches for poor marksmanship.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
While you're looking for that little button to turn on the laser, the gunfight's going to be over. Trust me. Finger needs to be doing something else besides looking for a little button.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Chris. We appreciate you calling and contributing to Guns Over Texas. We hope we helped you out with your issues. All right, let's head out to Memorial City and talk to Jim. Jim, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Jim?
I'm glad to talk to y'all again, and I will preface this by saying I live about two blocks from a range over there in Memorial City.
I know exactly which one you're talking to.
I come to see y'all more, and I go to High Noon Range. In fact, I'm headed out there now. The reason I'm calling is, I've met Dwayne, and he's right. It's a great range. And like y'all, you walk into it, it's a mercantile establishment, but you always feel like a friend in both High Noon and Shiloh. That's why I don't go to the one in Memorial City.
Well, we appreciate you coming to shoot with us, Jim.
They're merchants, and yes, I understand, they're merchants. Mm-hmm. But they also only have a 50-foot range and crank out targets. No, thank you. I also, on Sundays, the reason I'm calling really on Sundays, after the range closes at 7, mm-hmm. a bunch of us get out here and we have a competition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like $15, 10 goes to the range, 5 goes into a pot. And I have won the pot a couple of times, so a 67-year-old can actually win in this thing, shooting a XDM as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I said, we never said they didn't shoot. They just aren't our first choice.
I know. You just have to learn how to aim them. No.
The bumpy things on top of the gun do come in handy at times.
The main thing was, yes, they are a good quality range, like y'all are. And I just wanted to say, hey, I enjoy both of y'all, and I'm glad y'all have a 75-foot range as well, because that's what we do shoot in the competition.
That's
we do 25, 35, 45, 60, and 75 feet, 10 shots at each one, at each range. And on the final Saturday, or the last Saturday of the month, 22 pistols at bowling pins on 4 foot by 18 inch platforms. You have to shoot it all the way off the platform to count.
Nice. Cool. That sounds like fun.
And it is a blast, definitely. And we have anywhere from 8 to about 12 people that show up, and we're always out of there by 8:30 in the evening. So I even have a chance to get home over to Memorial City and still get a good night's sleep.
Well, Jim, we appreciate it.
Hey, I enjoy y'all's place as well. Definitely. Not a problem.
Thank you. And maybe we'll look into doing a friendly competition like that. I'd like to put my money on Tracy. She she had a little competition with the boys at the range pretty recently, and we put a spoon on a target and sent it out to 75 feet. And all the guys went first, and, we're getting close. Tracy steps up, one shot right through the spoon.
All right. We've got one lady that's about 5'1", maybe 5'2". She started out on a 380 and decided she went to a 45.
Hmm.
And it looks like it's going to jump out of her hand every time she shoots it. But with the silhouette target, possible 500, she shot a 495.
Sweet.
So she'll hit what she's aiming at.
Jim, Tell everybody hi out there at High Noon for us, will you? And we appreciate you calling, and we appreciate the kind words as well.
Oh, no problem.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good time tonight.
Take care.
All right, and now let's head all the way out to Huntsville and talk to Sam. Sam, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Sam?
How you doing, sir?
Great, sir. Thank you.
All right. Hey, I got to tell you, I bought a pistol recently that I'm really enjoying, and I wanted to tell that man that called in wanted to know a recommendation. Mm-hmm. It's a Sig Sauer P250. It's as simple to operate as a revolver because it's double action only, has a hammer. Mm-hmm. You can't cock the hammer because it's kind of embedded. But it has four different calibers, three different sizes. You can do it subcompact, compact, or full size. 9mm, 40, 357 Sig, or 45.
Yep.
And you could practice it with 9mm and then switch out the calibers and carry it as a 45 and shoot exactly the same.
Yep. No, it's a pretty neat gun. Unfortunately, Sig's going to discontinue it.
They're what?
They're going to discontinue it. Buy it while you can.
Yeah, so buy your conversion parts.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That is an awesome pistol.
It's a great concept, and you've heard me talk about, you know, in the past that I want to buy Jeff's whenever he finally decides to deadline it off of the rental gun list. But it's a great idea that just didn't catch on with law enforcement. Unfortunately, if you can't justify large contracts through some governmental agency, chances are the design's not going to survive that well.
Wow.
It had some issues in 357 Sig. Apparently the air marshals got a hold of it, and things did not go well for the gun or for the contract. And other agencies took note, and it unfortunately kind of killed it.
Okay.
Well, but in 9mm, it runs great. That's a lower pressure round, and if you got one in 9, it's going to keep
it. Yeah, I mean, overall, it's a great platform. It's just that issue came up.
Really cool concept.
Yeah. And it's
the
smoothest.
When I went to qualify for CHL, there was a guy next to me that had bought a couple of 380s at auction, and both of them malfunctioned on him.
Yep.
He was diabetic, had some strength issues and stuff, and those guns just, so I'd really recommend, don't buy one just because it's cheap.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
You get what you pay for. But that Sig, like I say, you shouldn't have any problems with it, especially if you get it in 9mm. 40 should run fine for you because you're probably not going to put 10,000 rounds a year through it like the air marshals were trying to do with 357 Sig. My only complaint about it is it's kind of fat. But that's because they want it to be able to handle 45, 40, 357, 9.
Right.
So it's a little bit wider than I would like for a concealed gun. But as far as it fitting my hand and running, it's got one of the best double-action trigger pulls of any gun ever.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'll go up in date.
Maybe.
Right.
Enjoy it, sir. It's still a good gun.
Thank you.
We appreciate you listening, Sam. We appreciate you calling in. Now, Houston, we're going to take our long commercial break right now. We'll be back in about 6 minutes with more Guns Over Texas. And coming up next, we've got John Farnham is going to be giving us a call in around 6:30 or 6:40. So if you have any questions for the handgun sage, give us a call and we'll answer. We'll ask the questions for you. So hold on for about 6 or 7 minutes, Houston. We'll be back with more Guns Over Texas.
From KSEV, the voice of Texas, this is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Welcome back, Houston, to hour number two of Guns Over Texas. If you have questions, comments, want to get involved in the show, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Or Gary is manning GunsOverTexasRadio.com and Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook. You can get us at any of those. You can get us through any of those. So what were we talking about, fellas? No, there was something you wanted to talk about
the break. The whole deal was that we've had a lot of questions about the shooting that we had over at 1916 Perry Road earlier this week. And then, of course, there was HPD's shooting of a
double amputee.
He's not a paraplegic at all. He's just double amputee. Correct?
Yeah.
Who was, wait, was he, did he corner him? Was that the story?
The story said that the officer was cornered by the double amputee in a wheelchair. At some point, you've got to consider putting your boot on the wheel and spinning the man around.
Call parking control and getting a boot?
Yeah, I don't know about that one. But the questions that came up were, we had someone who wanted to know about what constitutes deadly force, and also just wanted to know more about what happened in that incident. And what we know of it is that a young woman by the name of Crystal Scott ended up in a traffic altercation.
She was hit by somebody, right?
Well, or bumped into? You know, apparently there's a little bit more to the story in that it was a road rage incident. So before there was even an actual collision, she and, let's see, I got to find the other driver, Jonathan Abels. Apparently, at some point in time, she believed that Mr. Abels had cut her off. That turned into a tit-for-tat kind of game of chicken where one would cut the other one off, slam on their brakes. And this happened several times, and at some point in time, Ms. Scott ended up in front of Mr. Abels, and there was a traffic collision. So then the two of them pulled into a gas station, and Mr. Abels got out of his pickup truck, ran towards Ms. Scott's car, began beating on the car with closed fists and hitting the windshield, hitting the roof. And at some point in time, moved around to the driver's side door, tried to open the driver's side door, where Ms. Scott decided she was not going to have any of that, and she put him around through the window.
Good for her.
Driver's side window. And it killed Mr. Abels right there on the spot. That's pretty much all we really know about that. Now, we've since heard reports that apparently there were multiple people in the vehicle, in Mr. Abels' vehicle, who said, yeah, he did get out of the car and run towards hers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only real question is what's going to happen with that case? We know that it will go to a grand jury, and then they'll review the facts and decide whether or not her use of force was justified. It could be argued that she could have just driven off. The thing is that she was just in a traffic accident, so she probably was thinking, I've got to exchange information with this guy, mm-hmm. and didn't think she could just leave.
And I'll even give you the argument of I didn't want to stop on the side of the road because of all the stuff that was going
right.
on, so I went to a well-lit, heavily occupied location of a
right.
gas station where there would be security cameras and people to
mm-hmm.
watch because I wanted to avoid an altercation.
Right, exactly. And so she was left with no choice when he decided apparently to try to open the door. She shot through the door and killed him instantly. Someone asked if Castle Doctrine had anything to do with this. It doesn't. It's not really applicable. All that really matters in this case is that she have a reasonable belief that he was going to cause her, you know, harm, that there was immediate danger of harm.
Mm-hmm. And she could argue, I've tried to drive away from him. He keeps
yeah.
following me.
Yeah. I mean, the definition of justification in this case is that he had, you know, he obviously had motive.
Mm-hmm.
He had means, i.e. he was beating on the car. You know,
and bigger, stronger than a
bigger,
female,
stronger,
probably.
So there's a disparity.
Well, we have to assume. We don't know about the disparity of force, but usually
but
in general, men are bigger
in
than
general,
women.
In general, men are bigger and stronger than women. Even if the guy happens to be smaller than a woman in terms of weight, he still may end up being stronger. So, you know, we have a disparity, probable disparity of force there. We don't know if there's video of it. There may, in fact, be video.
What kind of gas station was it?
I want to say it was a Chevron.
If it's a corporate gas station, Shell, Chevron,
then
there's
a pretty good chance there's
video. Yeah, I'm going to bet money there's video somewhere.
But then again, you know, the thing is unless it was at one of the pumps, there may not be.
Yeah, good point.
And from what I've seen of news footage, that didn't appear to be at one of the pumps. So that's possible. But like I said, just you know, Castle Doctrine doesn't have anything to do with this. But in the interest of simply saying what's the justification of the use of force, one could say necessity. One could say, you know, use of force to defend myself against unlawful force. And because of the disparity of force and the apparent mindset, I mean, if the guy's beating on your car, that doesn't sound like he's going to just hit you and it's going to be over.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does sound like it's potentially justified. And, you know, I don't want to say, you know, hey, good job, because, you know, this wasn't your typical turd from what I've understood, but it just sounds like a really unfortunate situation. She was forced to do what she had to do.
Unfortunately, if you're going to go out and play big boy games and run around screaming, I'm going to kill you or
right.
I'm going to beat you
then
up or I'm going to do whatever.
You deal with the consequences.
Bad things can happen.
Yeah.
You got to understand. You can't throw those words out there.
Right.
and not expect at least the possibility
that you might have to answer for them.
Yeah, and it's sad on all parts. One thing I've I have to assume, I haven't seen the reports or seen photos or anything, but I can only assume, since we're not being Trayvon Martin to death on CNN with this, that they were of like races.
Actually, I believe Ms. Scott may have been black.
Well, I don't see the outrage.
Well, yes, but it's a much more clear case if you think about it. This was
if you're in front of 50 witnesses and video cameras, it's a little different than just he said, she said on the side
exactly.
of the road.
And there's no 911 call of, you know, are you following him? Well, yeah. Followed by, well, he followed me or whatever. Yeah. You know, there's no issue with weird statements going on or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It really does sound like a single mom was scared for her life. And a guy went, you know, ape, literally. And,
I say good for her.
Yeah.
And
call it like you see it.
She acted accordingly.
And the kind of person that does that to a single woman, you know,
you wouldn't know. But the thing is that there's an issue of always behaving like an adult. We talk about this in the CHL class all the time. Nonviolent dispute resolution. Mm-hmm. Even if you've been sitting there playing chicken, there's no reason to come over beating on somebody's car as if you're going to cave in their skull. They may act accordingly. She could have just driven over him, and that would have been justified.
Mm-hmm. We don't know from her position in the gas station, though. Was she blocked in? Could she not leave anymore at that point?
Yeah.
Who knows?
That's true. But we also come back to she may not have believed she could leave. If you've been in an auto accident, you can't just leave the scene.
And has this ongoing, I've been trying to get away from him for several blocks,
right.
And I haven't been successful.
And haven't been successful.
How many more people are in danger if I try to run
all
at 80
things.
Miles an hour?
Right. So it comes back to it's now you don't get to decide what is reasonable. A grand jury will.
Hopefully the grand jury.
And it sounds like as long as the prosecutor doesn't make a recommendation of charges in this case, it sounds like they will probably review the case and she'll be no billed. She's still got the trauma of having this happen.
She's going to have to live.
And there's a very real possibility that his estate could sue her.
Is going to sue her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is, I mean, obviously we don't know all the facts, but from what we've seen, it seems relatively clear cut and just unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
That, man, it's going to really stink if now the relatives are going to come back and take her to the cleaners.
That is possible, yeah. So we'll see. Now, I still want to know more about this double amputee who was cornered.
I know about
as much
as you
do. I'm sorry. Wait, the double amputee cornered the cop.
I know about as much as you do, and that was the guy has one arm and one leg, or had one arm and one leg.
But with one arm and one leg, and you still have one arm left, it's still possible to apply deadly force to the officer,
it
even
is,
from distance.
It is
true.
And he had a long history of mental illness. Uh-huh. He lived in a group home, uh-huh. And he'd been living there for the past.
And apparently, the
months.
Officers are no stranger to this cat.
That's right. It's 2:30
in
the morning.
But I'm still trying to figure out how did he corner you.
Blow it into the straw as the little thing goes and then
you like kind of use your eyeball to type as Stephen Hawking would.
See, that's the problem. Y'all are giving this the Stephen Hawking treatment of he's going to type in the threat, and after he types in, you're going to hear, "I'm going to kill you, officer." You know. I'm assuming that this might not be the case, but you never know.
It might not be, but I'm still stuck on he's got one leg. And he's in a wheelchair. I'm trying to figure out how exactly do you get cornered by that.
Maybe it was one of those motorized ones. Yeah, and he's moving fast.
Moving
I don't
fast.
Know.
You
this
never
is
know.
Not the, well, have you ever seen Doctor Who?
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, no.
Okay. Well, it's this a really old show, right, from Great Britain. And
Doctor Who?
Yes. And so there's these characters called the Daleks, right? And it's one of those things that has never made sense. They move around at 2 miles an hour in a motorized wheelchair. How do you get cornered by somebody?
Now, but as far as them still being a threat, and this isn't meant to be a discourage on a veteran, but if you've got a combat veteran who's fired thousands of rounds and only has one hand and he's intent on suicide by cop and he wants to bring up a gun, guess what?
Then
he's going to whip it out and he's still a danger.
I'll give you that, but I'm trying to see where this guy got cornered.
I'm thinking in the officer's shoes, how out of his way he went to go, man, if I shoot this guy, I'm never going to hear the end of it.
And it is his second shooting.
again, depending on what beat you work in, I've never appreciated that. Well, oh, statistically, you'll probably never have to shoot your gun, which is true.
Unless but you work certain areas.
On where you put me, and what part of town. Yeah, and
late
what,
at night.
Do I work midnights on narcotics, or do I work days on kiddie porn?
Yeah. Now, the first shooting, apparently he came across a guy that was stabbing someone.
This is the officer we're talking about.
Yeah. So that seems very justified, in my opinion.
Well, I don't know the officer from Hill of Beans, so I'm not saying he's at all trigger happy. We don't know. It's just that it does just, not.
You've got plenty of comic material here with, I'm going to shoot you.
And there were two officers on the scene.
Who didn't?
I mean,
were they there to decide whether or not they needed to shoot?
No, well, it was him and his partner.
Okay.
So maybe one of them could have gone.
I don't know.
Grab the handles.
What if you tased the wheelchair man? Could you have caused him to? I mean, I don't know what the circumstance was, but apparently the circumstance was whatever one good hand he had, he would not display for the officers.
Okay.
After repeated calls to do so.
I'm just wondering, was this officer familiar with this particular guy?
Because
I almost wonder if
that.
It wasn't a case of, you know, let me see your other hand, and he's going, I don't have one to show you.
Ha ha, fooled you. Here's my stump.
I don't know. That may be mean, but I don't know.
We are all going to hell.
It's a terrible situation, but, you know, how do you get cornered?
That's the thing I have to wonder. I really would love to see that scene.
Well, the guy in the wheelchair was obviously off his nut anyway. And, the people that live there said, this guy's got serious issues.
I totally get that.
I'm just looking forward to more coming out.
I would like to hear more information, because right now it does not sound good.
All right.
I just wouldn't want to be that guy in the squad room, you know, because you know they're going to ride him.
I'm sure he's catching it bad. Let's head out to the Woodlands and talk to Lenny. Lenny, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say?
Hey, how y'all?
Great,
good,
sir.
How are you?
My question is, in today's economy and all that, has that hurt or helped the antique values, like, say, your single-action Army Colts and your old early Winchesters?
You know, it really depends on the buyer. A lot of the folks who used to have disposable income to buy that kind of stuff don't have disposable income anymore. So it you know, in some circles, depending on where you are, it has actually depressed values. And in other cases, you've got a few folks who go, at the end of the day, guns are always going to have value. And
they're not making any more 1865 original Colt model whatever.
And so the value still goes up among that small circle of folks.
Yeah.
Right. I haven't been to a show in quite a while, and the people I talk to that go say they don't see a whole lot of the old stuff around anymore.
It's no, like you don't. Modern. It's going to be modern stuff. People what are concerned
moves,
about.
Yeah, what moves off the shelf, though, and what's going to turn the biggest profit for the individual salesman?
Yeah.
Yep.
Tactical stuff.
Well, and not only that, but also just the interest has shifted. It's a lot of us, there used to be people who were, used to be the most people that were at a gun show were collectors.
Yeah. Yep.
And now that's no longer the majority. The majority of people there now are either interested in competitive shooting or defensive shooting. And so that is what is driving the market, is because you've had this huge interest of an influx of folks who used to not be into guns at all. But they've suddenly become, you know, between economic turmoil and the things that happened coming out of Katrina, where the government just kind of went, yeah, we're going to take your stuff. That has driven that concern. People said, no, I would rather be able to defend myself and live dangerously than be a safe slave.
Right.
So, well, so yeah, I mean, like I said, unfortunately, it just really depends on where you are, and you know, it's a smaller market, particularly on the antique guns. It's a smaller market than it used to be. But if you find the right buyer, you may still get a decent value out of what you're looking to sell.
Right. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Lenny. All right, Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll get right back to the phone line. So hold on for just a couple more minutes. We've got more Guns Over Texas coming up. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. Gary just found out he's got a new admirer in town. All right.
Got to give a shout out to Mahdi and his special special fan of the show, Mahdi, today.
Yeah, and Mahdi, no.
All right, let's head out to the Champions area and talk to Bill. Bill, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Bill?
Good afternoon, guys. Good to hear from you. I'm going to be traveling where I'm going to be flying instead of driving. And okay. I've got a pistol that I want to take, and I've got a CHL going to Arizona. So how do I, you know, what advice can you give on how to transport the weapon? How does it have
well,
to
the
be?
Gun must be in a TSA-approved, lockable,
hard-sided
container. Yeah. And so you'll need to check with your individual airline because every airline has policies that are a little bit different.
Stored, unloaded. I mean, in general, it has to be in a hard lock-sided container.
Correct.
Or hard-sided lock container. No ammunition. Ammunition has to be stored separately.
Yes.
And you have to declare it when you're going and checking
in. And the ammunition must be in a container designed to hold ammunition.
Okay. Yes. Does that have to be in a separate bag as well, or can they both be in the same bag?
I think it can't be in the box locked in with the gun, but I think they can both be in the same bag. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, Gary.
I have seen it done in the same bag, it depends on the airline.
The person at the counter will instruct you how they want it done.
Okay. And so now these TSA-approved things, can you just buy them at Academy, or do you guys sell them at Shuttle, any of that kind of stuff?
Jeff?
We sell a lot of Pelican cases, and right, we can get one of those for you, depending, figure out the size that you want, and we'll have it for you the next day.
Okay.
Pelican is a TSA-approved case.
Right. Okay.
And it's a damn nice case in general.
It is.
Yeah. Now, the case that the gun came in, I mean, it's a hard side, but it does have an integral lock, but can you put a padlock on that or a TSA lock?
It has to be a TSA-approved lock.
Yeah, you can go to like Amazon.com or Google and just type in TSA-approved pistol cases, and there's, you'll get 50 of them pop up.
Okay. Very good. All right. Thanks very much, fellas. I appreciate it.
No
Thank
problem,
you, Bill.
Sir.
Now, in just a few minutes, we're going to have John Farnham call in, and he is, for those of you that don't know, he's from the Jeff Cooper School of Gunmen, and he's been around for a long time, and he is one of the foremost instructors that you'll find in the country, and he's going to be in Victoria, I believe it's October 13th and 14th, teaching a defensive handgun and urban rifle course.
Always lands on my anniversary. I can never go to this class.
If
you just gonna have to get divorced.
You've been married long enough now. She won't mind.
You'll have an anniversary again next year. How often is Farnham gonna be around? Come on. If she loved you, she'd understand.
Oh, sure.
If you have the opportunity to take a course, this is a great, great course to take. Whether or not this is your first time or this could be you could have taken multiple courses
your
in the
50th
past.
Time.
It's worth it to pay the price just to listen to John talk, in my opinion. And for the beginners, there is a beginner side, and that's taught by his wife, Vicky, who is also one of our country's foremost instructors and one of the toughest instructors to pass a course from when she's teaching the advanced shooting portions. But it's a class that anybody can take, whether or not you've ever held a gun or you're a grizzled veteran, you will learn the most efficient and proper ways to operate your guns, whether it be handgun or rifle. Gary, you don't think your wife would let you out just for a little bit?
No.
Maybe on a.
In fact, I know I'm otherwise occupied that weekend. I've already made the plans.
Well, it's worth a shot. So if y'all have any questions or comments for John, feel free to either call in with him, 281-558-5738, or get us on Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook, and we will relay the questions to him. Now, question that we get a lot at the range is, what about a discount gun? I don't have $500, $600, $700 to spend on a good quality carry gun.
We were discussing this earlier. It's called a used Glock.
Some Glocks just don't fit some people's hands.
Eh.
Okay, so let's.
Well, it is true. Here's the thing, and I know this is going to sound callous, but unless you just have really small hands, a Glock fits your hand. No gun really was designed for the human hand. I mean, they are in the sense that this is ergonomic design and that sort of thing. But the human hand was never designed with the gun in mind. Okay. So it's like any other tool. You know, does anybody sit there and really complain that, well, this ratchet doesn't feel good in my hand compared to another ratchet?
Well, I'm sure the people at Craftsman versus Snap-on would say that theirs fits your hand more ergonomically
than
the other.
That's usually the last thing they mention. They're more concerned about, you know, whether or not it has a positive lock and all that kind of stuff, the things that make a ratchet a ratchet. And so at the end of the day, what makes a gun is, you know, it's got some little bumpy things on the top, and there's a spiral tube, and there's a bang switch. You put your booger hook on, and you push the bang thing, and you put the thing on the thing, and you press the thing, and it goes bang.
Right? Very articulate.
So what I'm getting at is that there's a desire to say, well, this isn't my favorite arrow, therefore I can't shoot. But if you actually learn to shoot, and, you know, I grew up on some crappy guns. My school did not have the best guns in the world to shoot with, and so I had to make do with a Mossberg 44 that probably dated to 1944 and had been shot by two or three different generations of kids, and yet we made it work. And, you know, when it came to handguns, you know, if all we had was Tauruses, yes, the world would suck. However,
some of them might actually work, and you'd learn how to work with the tool you had.
And I'd have to work with the tool I had.
You know, speaking of that, we actually had two of them in this past week alone, mm-hmm. that the locks on the gun worked themselves shut as the people were shooting.
Yep.
And neither one of the people had the key.
Right.
Yeah. Now, it happens
so
enough
so safe
that
they don't even work.
It happens enough that we actually had the key in our cash register, so we were able to help them out.
Almost like a handcuff key.
Yeah, and one of the guns had worked itself shut out of battery, so mm-hmm. slightly out of battery. Nobody could figure out what was the matter with it, why they couldn't get it back in place. And I took the key out there, unlocked it, and popped right back in.
Yep. So, I mean, I know I'm going to take some heat from that because there's going to be folks who go, well, I can't shoot with a Glock. And I'm sorry. I haven't met a single person other than somebody with really small hands who just couldn't get it around that gun that mm-hmm. could not shoot a Glock.
But overall, if we look at – it just came out this week. We were talking during the break about Bud's Firearms Online. They post their top 10 best-selling guns
High Point
for
and
several
Voice
years.
And, the gun.
And trust me, Glock, Smith & Wesson, SIG, HK are nowhere to be found on this list.
But you know
it
what?
It is always
I'm
the
curious.
Cheapest High Points.
I get that, but I'm curious what generates their sales. Is it the guys that – because I often wonder where these people buy these guns. Because I see them all the time in my – you know, they'll show up for a class and it doesn't work, and then they go
well, the High Point and the pawn shops and stuff like that, or even big box stores, they might not sell High Points, but they make their bread and butter on Tauruses.
Mm-hmm. Tauruses
and they say
and
it's the biggest gun manufacturer in the world. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the best. I mean, Volkswagen used to be the number one manufactured car in the world, and it ran, which is more than I can say for a Taurus most of the time. But just because Volkswagen cranked out the most Beetles in the world doesn't mean that that's necessarily the best long-term car you could have got for whatever purposes there were.
No, it wasn't. I just my most strongest memory of that car is seeing one in front of me on Beltway 8 erupt into flames at the toll booth for no apparent reason.
Much like a Taurus. But the number one gun, and I can actually understand this, the Mosin Nagant, mm-hmm. the old Russian World War I and World War II standby bolt-action rifle, mm-hmm. they sell them for $109.
Well, at least those guns work.
And it still works, and you can still make one-inch groups at 100 yards with most of them. Mm-hmm. You know what? For $100, I might buy one. A case of ammo will cost you more than the gun will.
Oh, good. Have fun getting the Cosmoline off of that thing, too.
Gasoline, son.
Gasoline. I got nothing but time, and this thing isn't going anywhere. It's already 100 years old. So I can kind of understand that. But then the other one, number two most popular gun from the internet sales is Jeff's favorite, the Ruger LCP-380.
And if there's any first-time listeners out there, he was oozing with sarcasm when he said, my favorite. Now, what are some good quality guns that people can get brand new for right around $400 or used to $250?
If I had to get a new gun and only had $400 I could spend, maybe if you looked hard enough, you could find a blue box Glock, mm-hmm. which are usually sold to law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But you can probably find a brand new in the box Glock if you looked hard enough for around $450.
Right.
But used, all the police trade-ins that come in on the internet, you can Google police trade-in Glocks and probably find them for $350 to $375.
And that may as well be new because
most of them are carried a lot, shot a little. And they'll have cosmetic scuffs, but that's fine.
Who cares?
The Smith & Wesson third-generation autos, by no means my favorite.
But they work.
Mm-hmm. They work. Yes. They're not my favorite for how they fit my hand. I know we were just discussing mm-hmm. that. And I don't like double single action. But you mm-hmm. can find used Smith & Wesson third-generation autos all day long for $250 to $350.
Right. And you might even find holsters for them. That won't be a new holster because they're not as common mm-hmm. anymore. But there were holsters out
yes.
there for them.
All the NYPD car trade-ins, because NYPD apparently can't keep from their guns just going off spontaneously in their holster and shooting themselves. But I guarantee you, as long as
triggers.
You
but God help you if you're on a crowded street, because they've gone bang just all time in.
But I've been to several gun shows and seen hundreds of NYPD trade-in Glocks, which are the trigger pulls are so smoothed out on them from years of use. Mm-hmm. They're beat up and they're scratched up, but they work just fine from $275 to $350.
Right.
A quality gun for an affordable price.
Mm-hmm.
So they can be had if you're willing to put in the time and look.
Ruger P-Series guns?
Yes.
Yes.
They're big and chunky.
They have
sharp
that
edges.
Stupid safety and decocker, most of them
but
do.
But they do run.
Yep.
Yep.
Let's see. The Smith SD series, Smith & Wesson. It's their step above a Sigma, step below the
it's
M&P.
It's a rebranded Sigma.
No, the internals are different and the mags don't interchange.
Don't mm-hmm. they? Don't.
Okay. Well, that's my understanding, that they don't interchange. But supposedly the trigger dropping mechanism is different than it was. It's closer in trigger mechanism to an M&P than it is to a Sigma, but it's not interchangeable parts for most of the internal stuff.
Okay.
And they, of course, they didn't make it as fancy a slide. They didn't make it as nice roll marks. They didn't make it as well refined. But I tell you what, the few SDs I played with, while it wouldn't be my first choice of a gun, for $250 to $300, nothing wrong with it for $250 to $300. I'd take it over a Taurus any day of the week.
Yeah.
Day of the week.
How about Charter Arms? 100% American-made, mm-hmm. and all their parts are either made in-house mm-hmm. or by vendors within 50 miles of their factory.
Mm-hmm.
That's a manufacturer I can get behind.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Now, they only do revolvers, last I checked.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But
now, I have a question from earlier. We were talking about the American-made gun, and mm-hmm. I know that Glock, see, a lot of these big gun companies, in order to get government contracts, had to build and manufacture in the U.S. Beretta built a factory in Maryland. Mm-hmm. Sig built a factory in New Hampshire. Glock built one, and HK both built one in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
HK Sterling, Virginia. But all these companies came over and set up shop just so they could get government contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Did Taurus ever set up a shop here, or did they strictly import?
Last I checked, they were still all import.
All right. Well, so much for made in the USA, if that's something you want.
Let's head out to Sugar Land and talk to Tom. Tom, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Tom?
Good afternoon. I just was listening to an individual that said he wanted to travel by air to another state. Mm-hmm. Just have a couple of recommendations because I've flown in the past and carried my own pistol.
Mm-hmm.
Number one is that he wants to make sure that the other state has a reciprocity with the state of Texas.
Well, he's going to Arizona, so it's going to be open carry if he gets there.
Yeah, okay. That's fine. And number two is that the ammo can be carried in the same case,
mm-hmm.
but it has to be like in an ammo box.
Right.
Okay.
So as long as it's not in a loose Ziploc baggie or something like that, it has to be a little individual.
Be in a magazine.
And that's designed to carry ammunition.
It is.
It is a carrying device.
Yeah, it can be carried in the same case, like a locked briefcase as an example. Only.
Right.
Okay. A recommendation I heard a couple of years ago, which made sense, is because due to the theft of potential theft
mm-hmm.
In the cargo hold of pistols, because you have to put a card on top of your pistol case that's inside of your regular luggage,
mm-hmm.
that there have been a number of thefts by people working there.
Right.
So the recommendation was use two cases, mm-hmm. both with locks on them.
Mm-hmm.
But one inside the other, that really secures it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and no matter how much he is asked, or if he is asked by an unknowing flight attendant or ticket clerk or whatever, he is not to give up those keys to those locked cases or give the combination to anybody.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but that's only two things that I've... several items I just want to make a recommendation on.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Tom, we appreciate you calling and letting us know how you did that, man. So thanks for your contribution to Guns Over Texas. All right, and let's head out to West Houston and talk to James. James, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, James?
Thank you very much. I've had a couple of questions. The first one is there like a, I couldn't call it normal, some kind of reason why I'm able to shoot a revolver a whole lot better than a semi-auto size than what's between my ears?
It's what's between your ears.
Yeah, it's mostly what's between your ears, dude.
I mean, I don't have any problem. I mean, I can take the same out of a target all day long, 25 yards with a revolver, mm-hmm. and other days I can sometimes hit the target with a semi.
It could depend on what you're used to. If you're an old-timer that's only shot revolvers most of his life, that's what you're comfortable
with. Well,
and
then the other question is, are we talking shooting a revolver in double action or single action mode?
Single action.
That makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get a 1911, and I'm sure you'll be able to do the same thing.
Yeah, if we put you in an autoloader and put you on a 1911 or something else with a really short trigger, you'd probably see the same results.
Okay, I'm going to have to check it out. Second question is, do you know if the ATF is still wanting to play poke the bear with the two purchases a week long guns for the border states?
I know that there's a push to do that, and that's something that's always going to be there from the Brady campaign. They're always going to push for that sort of thing. But at present time, in Texas at least, you can buy as many guns as you want.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks a lot. I'm going to have them try it out on a 1911. I got a friend who got one. I'm going to take it to the range.
Yes, sir.
10-4.
Thank you very much.
All right, James, we appreciate you listening, and we appreciate you calling us at Guns Over Texas. Hold on just a couple of minutes, folks. We'll be right back as we're going to take another quick commercial break. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. Questions, comments, want to get involved? You can get us at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. If you're thinking of calling in, hold on for just a minute as we're finally going to get to talk to our old friend and instructor extraordinaire, John Farnham. John, welcome back to Guns Over Texas.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm in Oregon right now at a police conference. This is a good occasion to talk about these things.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, John. And y'all pretty much travel all year long doing instruction, don't you?
That is my lot in life. And I sometimes am home during like December and January, but the rest of the time I'm on the road. And in this business, I've found it necessary. And as long as I can keep persuading people to pay me to do what I'm sure I'd be doing even if they paid me not to do it, I'll continue to do it.
Now, John, we've had you on the show talking about the course that you're going to be teaching in Victoria.
Yes.
We had you on, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago, talking about that. Give us give our listeners that might not have heard a refresher on what we're going to be doing in Victoria.
Well, in Victoria, we run two simultaneous courses. We have a basic course, which is intended for people who are new to this business and want a slow pace. And then we have an advanced course. This is for people we've had before and people who've been to other credible courses. And we cover a lot of the same material, but we go at a much faster pace. And we have curriculum items we don't include in a basic course, like retention and disarms. We show our students how to take guns away from people, how to keep from being disarmed, some close range routines and other stuff we don't get around to in our basic course. So we try to accommodate everyone, and we typically have a pretty good sized class.
How often does somebody start on the advanced side, and then do they ever go over to the basic side?
All the time. we've had this discussion before, but you know about all our guys. I've been shooting all my life. Well, as it turns out, he can't hit the ground with his hat. I let them decide for themselves where they want to go. But when it becomes obvious that he's in over his head, we'll diplomatically help him to conclude he needs to go over to the side and go at a slower pace. And conversely, on the other side, sometimes we have people who are fairly competent gun handlers, and the whole thing is just going too slow for them. So sometimes we go the other way, but sure, it's common that we, find a student in the wrong course.
Now, what is the typical round count for one of your courses?
For a basic course, they'll go through about 600. For the advanced course, they'll go through about 800 rounds.
Is that including both handgun and rifle?
Well, yeah. For the this year, we'll be doing a little bit of rifle, so we'll fire a couple hundred rounds out of the rifle too. that's only an advanced course, so we won't get to that in the basic course.
I've been lucky enough to go out there and take part in classes that were huge and had a ton of people in it. And then it's also been real nice when there's only been a couple, just a few people out there.
Yeah.
Because that round count really goes up, and
we
end up having to make late night trips to Walmart to go pick up more ammo.
And, you know, Jeff, this does sometimes become a problem. I try to provide my students with good information so they can get set up and have what they need. And then we never quite know what we have till we get there. And the cost of ammunition now is such a factor that a round count is really going to determine how much a student is going to, you know, spend in the course. And we have a lot of people who are coming, and they're on a budget, of course, aren't we all? And so I try to adjust it so it comes out about right. We don't want to consume every single round a student has because we want to send them home with some. On the other hand, we don't want a student to buy a whole bunch of ammunition and not shoot half of it. So we try to provide students with good advice, and we usually get pretty close, but not always.
Now, do you have any suggestions for people who want to buy in bulk? Good company to use? Anybody that you've used in the past?
As far as a source for ammunition?
Yes, sir.
You know, if you go to a big retailer and you want to buy, say, a case of ammunition, say, 1,000 rounds or 500 rounds, they should make you a deal. I mean, a better deal than if you bought the rounds, you know, 50-round boxes at a time. When they don't seem to be interested in making you a deal, then you probably ought to look around a little bit. But as far as, you know, there's lots of sources on the Internet, most of which are pretty good. A lot of my students have used them, and, you know, you can find some pretty good prices.
You're a fan of Georgia Arms, aren't you?
Yeah, Georgia Arms is one. Yeah. Ammo Man is another one.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several others. And I would get the best deal you can as long as you're getting, you know, quality stuff. I would be very cautious in warning students about what we call hobby reloads. There are people like Georgia Arms who reload on a production basis, and they have good quality control, and they put out a pretty good product in general. But sometimes people are making the stuff in their garage, in their basement, and sometimes it's fine, but oftentimes we find the hobby reloads are a real problem, and they become a safety issue because we have rounds that, you know, with no powder in them, and the primer blows the bullet halfway down the bore. And then the student puts another round in behind it and fires. And typically the second bullet hits the first bullet that's still in the barrel, and the barrel either bursts or it bulges. And so either the gun itself is ruined or at least the barrel is ruined, and sometimes it results in injury. So this becomes a pretty important topic, and I try to caution students about buying somebody else's hobby reloads. You know, buying reloads from production outfit that makes many millions of them every year is a lot safer generally. And the best thing to do, of course, is buy new ammunition, but I don't have to tell you what the cost is anymore.
Yes, sir.
And there are calibers like .40, for instance, and particularly .357 SIG. I don't recommend reloading at all. You know, these higher pressure, more modern pistol cartridges, we're having problems with rounds reloaded even once. More traditional cartridges like .38 Special and 9mm can probably be reloaded several times. But I get a kick out of ads that say, you know, our reloads are once fired. Well, how could they possibly tell that? You know, they take this stuff off the floor. And, you know,
that's
you
right,
know, once fired since the last time we reloaded it.
Yes, sir.
Reloads.
I was going to say, it is possible because at our range we only use factory ammo. And after we're done with the factory ammo and all gets policed up and put in big kitty litter buckets, it goes to a local reloading range. So I know that everything that came off of our line was definitely brand-new brass that was fired once and sent off to the reload company.
Yeah, but, you know, on a range floor, who knows how the round got there. And, you know, you can reload 10,000 and have one bad one, and there goes your reputation.
Yep.
Yeah. That was Jason talking. And
it's a police range.
Yeah.
So I know where
that's
comes
a little bit
on
different
one.
Than, say, Shiloh.
Yeah, exactly. Now, John, we were talking a little bit about discount guns, people that are buying on a budget.
Yeah.
Now, I know that along the same lines of thinking when it comes to guns, but what do you suggest for somebody who's on a budget and maybe can't afford that $500 for a Glock?
Yeah, you know, for less than $500 or $600, you're probably not going to find anything new that you'd want to own for any kind of serious purpose. There are some, you know, cheap, trashy guns available, but we don't consider them suitable for what we call serious purposes. That is, your life may depend on that gun. I recommend Glocks and, you know, and XDs and M&Ps and SIGs and all the popular brands, and they're fine. But as I say, for less than $500 or $600, you're probably not going to find one. Right now, the demand for these guns is very high, and most retailers are not offering discounts. They don't have inventory they're dying to get rid of right now, as was the case in the past. So, you know, when you don't have that kind of money, what you probably need to go is go on the internet to you know, a site called Gun Broker, where they, you know, they have, you can look at a number of used guns. You know, a used Glock or a used SIG or something like that is probably as good as new. Even a Glock that's had several thousand rounds through it is probably fine. And if you can pick it up for $100 or a couple hundred dollars less than a new gun, I don't see why you wouldn't want to do that. Sometimes, you know, you can go to gun shows and find, you know, similar things. A lot of retailers take in guns on trade and have pretty good prices on them because they just want to get them out of their inventory. And I tell you, a lot of retailers hang out at gun shows now.
Yes, sir.
Because they make, I know retailers now that make most of their sales at gun shows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like walking into a shop. I mean, they have the NICS check and the whole thing right there. And usually they have a nice inventory laying out there. You get your hands on a lot of different guns. You might pick up something that's perfectly suitable for a couple hundred dollars less than you would have got the same thing new. And it's probably worth doing when you're on a budget. And, of course, aren't we all?
Now, John, I subscribe to your quips, of course,
yes.
And that's quite possibly my favorite email to get every day.
<Thank you.
laughs> And tell us a little bit, give us a week in review with your quips.
Well,
and tell people how they can be a part of that.
As you know, a couple times a week, usually, I feel a lecture coming on. I can't help myself. I write these things. Typically, it's a paragraph or two. I don't like to go on and on. It's generally less than a page because a lot of my readers don't have time to you know, read long stuff. I try to make my point very quickly. And I have a number of students and correspondents around the world who send me information about incidents, about things going on politically and in our industry. And when I think there's a good point there, I try to paraphrase and summarize it very quickly and put it out to my students. My quip list now goes out to over 10,000 individuals, and there's no charge, and all you have to do is email me, and just, you know, tell me about your interest, but I'll be happy to put you on the direct list. This is no problem. So, and by way of review, it just so happens I'm in front of my computer, so there's some hope for this.
Even if you're not subscribed to it, you can go to your website and actually pull up the quips all the time.
It's on my, if you go to defense-training.com, all my quips are there dating back to, I think, 1998 when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite a lot of material now.
I will take you to task on this because I actually, Jeff got me into looking up your quips, and I actually went through and I've read them all over about the course of a year or so.
Okay.
And now that I've read them all and I go in and wait, it's like, man, he hasn't posted any. Man, it's been 2 weeks. And then all of a sudden it'll flood onto your website where there'll be like 8 quips.
Yeah.
And I'll read them in about an hour and go, great, now I got to wait 3 weeks for it.
Okay, well, you know, sometimes I'm doing courses and
Your job should take a backseat to my entertainment. But I have gone through and read every one of them, sir.
Well, that's very kind. I hope I didn't bore you to tears. But
no, they were good.
On the 18th of September, I talked about a case in the U.K. where two unarmed female police officers were dispatched to a burglary in progress call. The burglar came out of the house and shot them both to death.
You mean he didn't abide by the no guns rule?
Yeah, right. How'd you get these guns? They're supposed to be illegal. Idiot was arrested later on, but the two young gals are still dead. And I, for one, you know, what is it? I mean, we're just old-fashioned. I am outraged by stuff like this. It just makes me crazy. I think it's immoral, you know, to send these people to a burglary in progress call with no gun. And so
I can't imagine who'd want to be a cop in Britain just hearing that. I mean, yeah. Most of them don't even have the nightstick or the pepper spray option. It's like you're there to say stop or I'll say stop again.
Yeah.
But,
or I'll blow this whistle.
Or blow a whistle, and then there'll be 10 of us around saying stop. But
and blowing whistles.
Yeah, and until you get somebody there that's ready to go hands-on, you know, most folks, especially if it's a bar fight or something like that, they're not going to be able to take it one-on-one anyway without some type of force.
That's exactly right. And it just upsets me when the lives of these brave young people are taken so lightly, you know, by the people in charge, who, of course, are safe behind an army of bodyguards who are armed and are no danger themselves. That, I guess, that the hypocrisy of that is what was what upsets me. And of course, I write a biting quip about it. My next one was on the 20th. This was one of my students brought this out, and I thought it was interesting. We're all buying, you know, Glocks and SIGs and XDs and God knows what else, as well as black rifles, and that's all the rage now. I mean, they're making them, they're selling them as fast as they can make them. And we all have them ourselves, of course. But he said, you know, if you don't have a magazine for that gun, you've got a one-shooter, and a rather slow and clumsy and awkward one at that, where when you have a revolver or a lever-action rifle, it doesn't take a magazine. You can take loose ammunition and still have a repeater. And I guess we all know that, of course, but I guess I need to be reminded of it. Maybe we shouldn't lose touch with this old technology. Maybe we should keep current and make sure that when we come across these guns, we know how to run them.
That's
not
a great
just
idea,
concentrate
that's
on the what we consider modern arms.
That's a great idea, because it seems like now, if it's not, you know, a black rifle, nobody has anything to do with it.
Yes.
You never see anything other than that coming into the range.
Right.
Because it's not the hot hip thing. You know?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, for a smaller statured female student, a lever action 357 Magnum little 16-inch gun is light, it's handy, it's small, it's pretty stupid simple to operate.
Yep.
And it's
like they work just fine.
Works just fine. Kill you just as dead as something else.
You can take loose rounds and make it run.
Yep.
It's much more difficult to do that with these black rifles that we all have.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to make a point in the quip that the M1 Garand was the last rifle issued to American troops where ammunition was delivered to the soldier in an immediately usable form.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since we got ammunition, it had to be put in magazines. The magazine had to put in the rifle and the bolt closed to make the gun run. You couldn't just grab the ammunition, throw it in the rifle, and run it. And, of course, you know, I'm not suggesting we go back to that era, but what I'm saying is that advantage, and it wasn't quite an advantage, you know, kind of passed into history without anybody noticing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. You know, I still have a couple of Garands. And so I guess the point here is that I'm not sure we all have to learn how to sharpen flints, you know, and all that. But still, some of this old technology, like revolvers and lever-action rifles, we should keep current with that. And we should probably have these in our inventory and be prepared to use them and to teach them.
And, John, we're getting ready to run out of time here.
Okay.
Defense-training.com will get you will get you to your quips. And, you know, it's a blast to sit back and listen to you pontificate, especially during our classes, because that's kind of no holds barred. You're not on the air. And that's worth the price of admission in itself.
You know, Jeff, you guys represent the next generation of instructors. I represent the passing generation. And if I can influence you and if I can spread the sunshine
30.
That I have remaining, I will do it until my dying breath.
John, I'm honored to have you as my mentor, and we're honored to have you on Guns Over Texas. And I can't wait to see you in Victoria October 13th and 14th.
We'll see you there.
If you have a question about how to get involved in that, Houston, you can get me at Jeff at Guns Over Texas Radio, and we will answer any and all questions. So come out and shoot with us. Come out and shoot with John Farnham. Thanks for listening, Houston. Shoot straight.